How, by 34, had I gotten into this situation, this second marriage that, now that I had stopped drinking, I saw so clearly was unsustainable? I had married the first time when I was 21, when, still, it was not acceptable for a nice girl to live with a man if she wasn't married. But that was not the only reason. I was unsure about how to proceed in life by myself, too willing to concede when my father said my wish to have a career as a writer or in theater was impossible. And I guess I hoped that my first husband might show me some way to live. Later, far too late, I realized that my father was incapable of imagining that his children could live a life that suited them, a life that he had wished he had been able to live. But back then, I was too young, too still under his influence, to see that. My first husband came from a family of alcoholics, though I didn't realize that either, and I thought it was fun at 19 and 20, to be treated as such a grown-up at his parents' house, to every night be served Manhattan cocktails, those glowing amber drinks with the cherry in the bottom, just like mothers I had admired as a child, and to be served wine with dinner. I was drinking excessively even then, but not all the time, and it was the 60s, and I thought nothing of having actually crawled drunk across the floor of a restaurant with my new husband and a couple hard-drinking friends. When you're drinking excessively yourself, you think everyone else is too. It's not until you're sober that you realize there are lots of people who drink moderately or not at all. But when you are a problem drinker, you surround yourself with friends who also drink too much. And there was another reason to have gotten married, the draft. A young man who was married was more protected from being sent to Vietnam, where he would have to kill and risk being killed. So we got married. I got so drunk from champagne the night before the wedding that my head throbbed horribly and my stomach was queasy as I walked down the aisle of the pretty little Vermont church. I was not only sick in my body from a hangover, I was also, if only I could have admitted it, sick at heart, because I felt I had put myself into a trap. I knew deep down it was all a mistake, but I was not yet mature enough to respect my own judgments. Then within a year, because of a failure of contraception, I got pregnant. I did think that being pregnant was thrilling. I looked with wonder at the new images just made possible by special cameras in Leonard Nilsen's Life Before Birth book. We left our teaching jobs in New Hampshire when Matt was 5 months old and moved to Florida, where my husband took a construction job, and I read all of Hemingway's books as I took care of my baby son during the day in a nearly unfurnished apartment and worked at night as a cocktail waitress. It was difficult for me to work around liquor and not drink it. I would have a drink or two when I got home late at night. We left Florida after a few months. Matt and I went to stay with my parents while my husband took a trip in his Volkswagen bus to, quote, get his head together. Many years later, he said of himself, I was as immature as it's possible for a human being to be. While he roamed around in his Volkswagen bus, I went with Matt, 1 year old now, to Amsterdam, where my oldest sister lived, to stay with her and her two children several months, then in a rented apartment of my own. Being in that beautiful city around my sister's friends who were artists and writers, working a few hours a day at her art gallery while her childcare person took care of Matt and her two children, was heady, unreal, like that story in a Mary Poppins book in which she's able to walk into the life behind a picture. No jeans and plaid shirts worn every day, as in New Hampshire. I wore a long-printed cotton dress, unsensible shoes. Men on the street would turn to look at me. But what I wanted, what I needed, was someone to love me, someone to help me as I tried to be a good mother. There was constant heavy drinking around me, and I had a little child. I was always tired. When, one lonely night, I drank a whole bottle of wine by myself in that rented apartment with little Matt asleep. I decided I had better go back to New Hampshire, see if Matt's father and I could make a life, or I would, I feared, become an alcoholic. I didn't know I already was one, or that there was no life to be made with Matt's father. I went home. We lived together again for a few months of winter in a grim, gray Vermont town where the high point of my day was going to the grocery store. We finally separated permanently, and I got a divorce. I returned to my little town in New Hampshire, got an apartment over the bookstore and a job as a secretary, made possible only because there was something new nearby that made it possible for me to work, a daycare center. By the time I met Jack, when Matt was almost 4 years old, Matt and I had lived in 17 different places. I met Jack on the main street of my town where he was visiting for a college reunion. He had been in Vietnam, though not in combat. He and my first husband, my ex-husband, had known each other in college, and when I told him I was divorced with a little son, he'd invited us to go to that night's tent party with him. On the street that morning, Jack had reeked of alcohol. There had been a party the night before, and I should have paid attention to that, but I had not yet stopped drinking myself, gotten sober, as we say in AA. For some reason, though it was June, Jack was wearing a black beret, 6 feet 4 inches tall, with golden hair. Jack was a splendidly beautiful-looking person, with a broad, strong chest and muscled arms from his youth as an athlete. We'd gone that night to the tent party, little Matt, hungry for a father's attention since I had been raising him by myself, was terrifically excited by this friendly giant. Before the end of that summer, 1974, a few months before my mother died, Jack moved in with us, and later we married.